Welcome back to the podcast. We are actually today going to hear from one of our clients of the Good Partnership, someone we've been working with on and off and in different capacities for, well, since 2018. So for quite a while. And she's going to give you all the back end of her role as an executive director and approach to fundraising and learning about fundraising and all the good things. So buckle up. My name is Cindy Wagman, and you're listening to the Small Nonprofit Podcast, where we bring you practical, down-to-earth advice on how to get more done for your small organization. You are going to change worlds, and we're here to help. So with that, it is my pleasure. I'm so excited to have this conversation to introduce you to Deborah Gold, who is the executive director of Balance for Blind Adults. She's been in that role for 6 years and it is her first executive director role. And super fun fact, she loves riding her bike to work and just riding her bike generally. And her bike has her own Instagram account and a fantastic name, Violetta Bicicleta. Did I get it right?
Yep, that's her name.
So Deborah, welcome you and Violetta to the podcast.
She's in the next room, actually, because I had my last bike stolen right outside this door and here at the corner. And so now I just roll her into the office. I have to warn all our clients who are blind or partially sighted and some of our staff that the bike is there.
Yeah.
Just the door in the next room. Yeah.
Lovely.
I love living just a few minutes from my office and being able to cycle over.
Yeah. Actually, that's one of the things I miss about having an office is actually biking in. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah. So actually living in a different time.
Yeah. Deborah, we were just talking before we hit record, and I admitted that I actually don't remember how we first met, and then neither of us truly remembered. But I want you to go back even before we met. You were first-time executive director in a new role, and you decided that fundraising was important. Tell me about what was going through your head at that time, how you made that decision to even start looking for fundraising help, and what were you trying to solve for?
So some of the small nonprofit executive directors who are listening right now will completely identify with what I'm talking about, where you are hired for a new role or a not so new role for you, but in an organization where they very much need your help to get things back on track, let's put it that way. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail there, but this organization went through maybe about 10 years of not really paying attention on the revenue side. We are very fortunate to have a core grant in about 3 year stints, depending on the year, from the Ministry of Health here in Ontario. So it's easy enough to kind of truck along. Although, of course, to be honest, and maybe your listeners will identify with this as well, that amount has not grown in the 14 years since we first got it. So
That's
pretty typical for community services here and maybe in other provinces as well. I have no idea. So I came to this role from a background in research, also in visual impairment and sight loss at a large Canadian organization called CNIB, which some people may have heard of. And I was director of research there, national director of research as well. And I had written a number of grants. And also as a doctoral student, I was familiar with grants before that. So, you know, I knew I could have some success, but I knew that we wanted to do more. And I am fond of saying, I was fond of saying when I first started, the executive director of a small nonprofit wears about a dozen hats. Mm-hmm. It's extremely challenging to know what should be a priority. You are really, when I started, it's a little less like that now. We are a little more stable now, but I was, in fact, taking out the garbage one moment and writing a proposal the next, or making a presentation to the board, or helping with board development, or dealing with staff issues, which were, for the first 2 years I was here, were a priority, human resources. So there was just a lot going on. And there was a lot to do way outside of fundraising. And at the same time, I knew it needed some attention. I started in 2016. And the way I remember that we met is that I had been toying for about a year with an idea and the need for a fund development plan. If I could present the board with a plan for bringing in more revenue, because I knew they were interested. They had hired me with the expectation that that might happen, that that would happen. So I said, I can't do this myself. We're going to need to invest to get back. So I can't, the part that I don't remember is whether I researched and or somebody told me about you. It may have been a recommendation, but found a good partnership and then contacted you and we spoke and we signed a contractual agreement and you developed a fund development plan for us, which I was really happy to see and I'm happy to say now was the magic of which was a one-year plan because you said you didn't believe in something that would end up sitting on the shelf and that you wanted for this to be something we could accomplish in 1 year. And we did go about working on one aspect of that, which we'll come to. So that's kind of in a nutshell. There were a lot of things going on in those first 2 years. There was a little bit of turnover here. There was trying to get a hold of why staff were doing things the way they were doing. And had they not thought of this other way that it might be done? They were, everybody was seeing every client once a week. That's just an example. And I was like, well, does every client need you to see them every week?
It's the same. It's the well, it's always been done this way, right? What person hasn't come into an organization and the answer for generally a really good, important question is, well, that's the way it's done.
And I'm so proud of where we've come from there. I mean, we now have, I think, almost all my staff. And we only have six, five of whom are frontline providers, plus me. And then we have contractors and we can get into a little bit more of that and that we use on a part-time basis. And we have an exciting new program we've developed in one of our areas and much is going on. But for those four or five of our staff, I think it's five, it might be four, have additional roles. Mm. So one of our specialists with clients is also our volunteer coordinator. One of our other specialists is also the program coordinator now as of April 1st. And she's doing great. One of our others is the data quality specialist. That's a lot of time working on our database. And we just upgraded to a new. So, and interestingly enough, everybody's more productive with these additional responsibilities. Yeah. So, and of course, as everyone knows, what we're discussing here is also about driving in more revenue so that you can use that core grant to keep the staff you have happy on a year-over-year basis. Yeah.
Yes. So we did a fundraising plan for you. It was 1 year and it was very specific to tactics and deliverables. Was there anything in that plan that surprised you or that wouldn't have been on your radar?
Well, you gave us three possible projects or directions. Mm-hmm. And I think the peer-to-peer fundraising campaign was a surprise. It wasn't something we had thought of. You also, the first thing you talk about in the plan is grants, writing more grants. Didn't surprise me. And I knew it needed to happen. And it definitely is. We now have a grant writer part-time on staff on contract for the past 2 years. And it's been, that was also a great decision. Took us a bit to get there. I was writing them with the help of a summer student. I think either the summer you were with us or right afterwards, we were starting to work on sending out as many as we could once a year. But I knew that I couldn't keep that. I needed someone who was really good at it. But the peer-to-peer campaign was definitely the cake.
Yeah.
Not so, the icing, but the cake.
The meat of it. Let's talk about the peer-to-peer, because this is something I get really passionate about, where we look at, I know you know this because we've had this conversation, where so often in organizations, we look at our client base and we think that there's a huge separation. We make decisions about giving for them. We say, well, they're not in a position to give or be involved in fundraising. And we say they're the recipients. And on the other hand are our donors. And never the two shall meet. And we changed that with this peer-to-peer campaign called Because of Balance. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, if you remember, why we came to that as a fundraising strategy and how it's gone. Do you remember why we picked that?
I do. You did a ton of superb research. Your team did. And I can't remember her name, but there was a woman working with you who was talking about the ways in which our clients speak about us and kind of the philosophy also of our staff. We were, you know, at that point, and still we have a really strong philosophy. We have really great values, which we've since articulated in a new strategic plan and a new look, new brand, you know, that reflects who we really are. We have a heart-shaped B. That is our logo. And that's really, you know, really about the whole person, and empathy, trust, respect, inclusion, and independence are our values. So that was all coming across. The idea of getting, I think the idea was that you guys were saying was modeled a bit on the hospital model, that people are happy with what they received. Can they tell others about it and tell their story and then ask them to support Balance as a result of telling your story? So we asked, the suggestion was, I think it was a different name at first, but we changed it. I think I had input there, and it became the Because of Balance campaign, with asking people to complete the sentence stem, because of balance, dot, dot, dot. What have they been able to achieve, do differently, feel better about? Why do they love us? What is it they want to tell others about us? The initial resistance or feeling that it might not work was in two places. One was about, the staff were quite clear that they didn't want this thing that happens at hospitals where, you know, the doctor gets touted as part of the campaign, like, because of the treatment from Dr. So-and-so, you know, and you see the posters up in the hospital. No, the staff were like very uncomfortable with, because we're so small, they, you know, the idea that you would call out one staff member, and they were also private and shy and didn't want to. So we stopped that idea, that we gave that feedback to you guys, to your team. And then we, I can't remember what the other place was that we changed, but anyway, that was one of them. But we felt that there was some resistance as well from what you're saying. Sorry, it's come back to me. That the clients wouldn't be comfortable. There was some thinking on behalf of, and not as much, there's more fear than there was courage. We had to sort of change into, you know what, we're trying something new. We are not asking the clients to give to their own campaigns or to give to anyone else's campaign. We are asking them to tell their story to their friends and family and invite their friends and family to support us. And then the third place of issue to solve, let's say, I would not say it was exactly resistance, but more challenge for us, was because we were going to be supporting you guys in implementation, was in some of our clients' inability to use the technology that they might need for a campaign. So typically when you talk about what I consider to be the craziest, which is the cold water dumping on the head of one of the big organizations, but there's many, it's kind of social media at the crux of it, right? It's a little video clip, it's a photograph, it's, and blind and partially sighted people, not always, many are, I don't mean to generalize, but many of our clients who are coming here to learn technology don't have the ability yet and are still learning social media. So we decided we would invite them to use email. We would help them along every step of the way to become part of the campaign. And people ended up loving being a part of the campaign.
Amazing. And I definitely remember, and I'm going to shout out to Sarah from our team, who would literally, you know, get on the phone with people and do the tech setup, any challenges they had. And again, not everyone, but making sure that whoever needed support had support, where she would set up their online giving page and make sure everything was done. And, you know, that part of the implementation, and we're going to, you know, I think that's part of the conversation as well, is, you know, we went from the plan and you said, okay, let's do this, but we need help. And we came in and started doing the implementation, that it was not just like, here's some advice, but how do we actually mobilize people and how do we give them the tools to be successful? So Sarah was amazing with that. Hours on the phone, making sure everyone who participated felt supported and excited about what they were doing.
And then we took on a huge piece on this side.
Yeah.
Of in the subsequent year of doing it ourselves with our front desk person, taking it on as well. We had 19 fundraisers that first year. I think three of them were staff, four, I don't know, something like that. Not all staff, nobody was required as staff to do it. And then we had 27 fundraisers in 2019. But I'm going to get to that in a minute. I've got all my figures here. But I just feel like, you know, kudos to the person I had in reception. Mm-hmm. I was doing all of the communications coordination, supporting many, many, many clients. And we had a star fundraiser in that first year who raised top gift in 2018 was $1,540 by talking to friends mainly. Yeah. And she was so good at it that we invited her back in the second year to be a coach. And she worked with probably six or seven of the clients on the phone, helping them to shape their stories. And then we, again, provided the tech support from our side. But yeah, there is this sort of understanding. If you sign up for a ride, you know, I've done the Great Canadian Cycle thing to raise money for cancer for kids, to help fight cancer for kids, for sick kids. It's all you. You go in, you create page, you do all that. With our organization, we had to have a workaround for that because that would really, and now we're doing even more things. So we can come back to that if you want.
Yeah.
How the campaign has evolved.
So, well, tell me about that. How has the campaign evolved? Where did that first year, how much did we raise? What happened since? And we'll go from there.
So in 2018, we use Canada Helps, first of all, the peer-to-peer aspect of Canada Helps. Canada Helps is where the page is on our website. So if you go to our website, you click donate, that's an embedded Canada Helps. And we pay a fee to them. Yeah. In 2018, we raised $10,644, some of which came in manually into the office. We had that lead fundraiser dropping off cash almost every day for a month. And then we manually entered it into the P2P site. In 2019, we had 27 fundraisers and we raised a little more than that, $12,075. And we also held a benefit concert to launch the Because of Balance campaign. And we had someone tell an amazing story from the stage. And it was a heck of a lot of work. And I do not recommend it above a peer-to-peer campaign ever to anyone. In fact, one of the things that you guys said when you were delivering the fund development plan is stay away from events. If you're too small, you will burn yourselves out. And at the end of that whole experience, the two things combined, one of my staff members said, can we skip a year? And because these people are providing services and assisting with a major event.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had volunteers to coordinate. And it's a lot. And it's a great return from a feel good. We had a reception. The board loved it.
Yeah.
The awareness building, you know, it was great. But no, it's not. I said at the board meeting afterwards, I'm glad you enjoyed it, but it's never happening again.
I love it.
We went directly against the advice of the experts.
You paid.
We paid and we learned. This is why they said that.
Yeah.
So in 2020, we understandably didn't hold the Because of Balance campaign. So our staff member inadvertently got what he wished for. We skipped a year. It wasn't a good year to be asking clients to embed themselves in the campaign. We had no energy after launching a number of new programs. So while some places closed, Balance, like many nonprofits, was doing more. Yes, it was remote, but we were still doing a lot more. So I just said, no campaign this year. We got some great grants as a result of COVID relief needs. So we were good. And then in 2021, so this past fall, we brought it back and we had fewer fundraisers, 17 fundraisers, but we raised, including the matching donation, 24,000 plus.
Wow. So double the previous.
More than doubled. And in addition, So we had 126% increase in the money raised from 2018 to 2021. I think COVID helped a little bit because we could tell those stories as well. We had a 400% increase in the largest gift. So from $1,000 in that first year to $5,000 in the 2021. And that was not the anonymous matching gift. That was another donor. And then we had a 45% increase in the number of donations from 133 to 193 individual donations. The top fundraiser amount went up by about $215. And in terms of average gifts, we went from $80 in the 2018 up by about $5 in 2019, even though we had 8 more fundraisers, didn't change that much. And in 2021, with fewer fundraisers, our average gift went up to $125.
Amazing. Amazing.
And you're about to ask me about the non-monetary benefits.
Go for it.
No, the great thing about a campaign like this is it raises awareness about your organization. Many of our clients have not had the opportunity to speak about the services that they give us.
Yeah.
But beautiful. We help them with stories. And in 2021, we added one of Cindy's favorite communication strategies. We added video.
Yep.
And for not all our clients, some of our clients added audio. So you'll go to their profile and they didn't want to be on video. So we just took the audio off.
Yeah. It's a different story. It's adding a layer of engagement and it's so authentic. Yeah.
I want to get more of an expert involved in clipping and in TikTok but more in the sort of real aspect of Instagram where we can use much shorter clips for them to tell their stories. Yeah.
Awesome.
We added quite a bit. And we have their stories living on the website. So we have a Trusted Balance page and the stories get added each year and they live there. So we can clip them when we're writing grants, speaking to corporate sponsors and so on.
Amazing. And I love that you sort of stayed the course. Even you took a break from first year of COVID, but came back. And sometimes, you know, first of all, your first year, for some organizations listening, $10,000 is going to seem like a ton. And for others, it's going to seem really small, but it's planting those seeds. And for you, it was a lot, right? There wasn't an individual giving program. This kicked off individual giving for Balance. So I just love that now, a few years later, you really start to see that grow and it becomes something that your community expects and looks forward to. So I just think that that's so important to point out.
We also had some of our clients are connected overseas. Their family, we have many clients who have additional challenges, including being a newcomer to Canada or from a newcomer family. So there's a lot going on and they stay connected with family overseas. And we've had donations from other places in the world through the Because of Balance campaign. But I think more than that, it gives the opportunity for the person to really talk about what they love about us. And it's just a joy for us to be able to share that and for them to be able to share it. And then the other thing we did in 2021 was we held fundraiser meetings because we then had Zoom. We didn't have Zoom in 2018.
Well, we did.
We didn't. We at Balance had it by about 2019. We had it earlier than many, but we actually used it to convene because we weren't seeing each other in person.
Yeah.
And we used it to convene meetings and see how everyone was doing and they encouraged each other. And few had not checked how we got to congratulate people. Like, what? I raised how much? So we brought fundraisers together and not all came, but I think that helped a lot too. Yeah. It's people felt more engaged with the organization.
Yeah. Amazing. Now I want to talk about what's next. It's still very early days. So we can't look back on reflection, but I think your growth as an organization is worth noting that you took the success and you were able to turn that into actually looking to hire more long-term fundraising support. There were some challenges there. And I think those challenges are worth pointing out just because I know they're common. And I know it's frustrating for a lot of people who you build that momentum and your fundraising now is outgrowing your capacity. and you're having a hard time finding staff. So tell me about that.
So step back from that to just say that the first step for me was to find someone who could write grants for me. I mentioned earlier. So I agreed with that part of the fund development. And, you know, you're a small nonprofit. You're going to benefit from many grants out there that you don't even know about yet. And we had already done the foundation searches and that kind of thing. But I knew I needed someone to do more prospect research for me and to do the actual writing. And I interviewed three, we put an ad out for a contract person, and I interviewed three or four people to work for me 10 hours a week. But why did I do that? How did I do that? I want to first say that executive directors of small nonprofits who are listening, and I specifically say small nonprofits, although I'm sure all executive directors of all nonprofits maybe benefit from this, you need a network of support. And when I first took the position, new in the role, I tried to find it from within Ontario. I tried to find it from within my neighborhood of other EDs of small nonprofits doing a variety of things. I tried to find it within the Provincial Community Support Association. And there were some attempts, but I was a bit challenged. I joined an international group that based out of the States, which was in my area, my community, called Vision Serve Alliance. And I was at one of their in-person meetings. Now we say in-person in front of everything. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I was at one of their meetings, actually there. Yeah. And I went to, it was, I don't know if you've ever heard of open space technology for a conference. Anyway, Google it, because I don't have time to go
into
it.
You've told me about it, but yeah.
It's amazing. It's a way to generate topics and then generate interest in those topics. And I went to one where someone, maybe it was me, had raised the idea, put on the sticky note that we needed to talk more about fundraising. And I went to it and it was packed. The room was like, every table was filled with more than 10 people kind of thing. And there were lots of, and it's not all small nonprofits, there's some very large ones there. And afterwards, I approached a couple of colleagues and said, should I look at a grant writer? Like, do you guys have grant writers? How do, and they're like, well, yeah. How are you going to do this without, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I felt supported that I was going in the right direction. You absolutely need a grant writer. And one said should be full-time employee. And the other one said, no, no, you can do it with part-time. I ended up hiring someone 10 hours a week. She now works for us 7.5 and gets a heck of a lot done. We have a huge pipeline. I didn't bring that one up on my screen to give you the numbers, but I think last year we applied for many hundreds of thousands of dollars and we ended up getting $189,000, $137K of that is a major United Way grant to launch a new program here. I'm very excited. Wow. The employment program for blind adults. So that starts like next month. But she's just been a gem and a huge asset, tons of experience with various small nonprofits, and working on contract for us fits well with her.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing we did. And it definitely wasn't off my plate. So just in case people think that the ED is now, no. It's a partnership deal. No grant goes out the door without me reading it. It's all shaped by me with her first before it's written. There's a whole thing going on, synergy. And then in answer to your question, we then started to use the same group to ask about, to start to talk about development officer. So I had a colleague within the group who had hired a development officer. I met with her. That development officer is down in South Carolina, Charleston. And when I met with her, she was like, oh, you can't be looking at a contract. You need to bring the person in, have them be a part of your team. There's so much they can develop. So I went that route and I advertised for a full-time development officer after convincing the board that we had enough in reserve, that we had enough saved, that we could commit to something like this for about 4 years, full time. And as you say, it didn't work out. I mean, it worked out for the time that she was with us. I was hoping for a much longer commitment. I don't think I could compete with the going rate for a small nonprofit. Many out there listening will say the ridiculous going rate. I'm just being honest. I just like when I look at the amounts. But I also know that many large nonprofits who are hiring, it's just making it very difficult for us. So if they put a lot onto the plates of those people. And so the person was not very experienced, but it mainly, she went on to find something else. And then I was left with this question mark, this big question mark. Do I try to replace? I don't think I can compete salary-wise. I think that was a one-off lucky deal or unlucky deal, depending on how you look at it. She set us up really well in some aspects in the quick 6 months that she was with us. So we turned back to thing. We're called Constellation.
You came up to me, you're like, please help me.
So I called Cindy Bangman and I said, what should I do? What could I do to address this issue? And then you happen to be at work on your new model of working. And now we have somebody who's working for us on contract for about the same amount annually, but with 15 years experience instead of none.
Yeah.
So while I'm not getting everything, I'm also not putting on the plate of this person anything that's not fund development oriented, not donations, corporate sponsors, major gifts oriented. And I kept my grant right. So, amazing. I mean, fingers crossed.
So we're going to have you back on the podcast in a year. See how it goes.
Sure.
But that's it, right? It's really the implementation piece. At some point, you get to a place where you need someone who's just going to roll up their sleeve. So
I also think that the world has opened up, and you've had guests talk about this on your podcast a few times and you've raised it. I think it's really important to think about how much we're being impacted by the ability to work remotely. I don't like it so much. I like to come to the office. That doesn't mean I can't do it. And the fundraiser we have is in another province with a 2-hour time difference.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have been possible, or it would have been possible, but it wouldn't have been thought about, except say in the very avant-garde, like cutting edge tech companies that were all that way to begin with. The rest of us are trying to serve our clients in very local feeling mode.
Yeah. Deborah, thank you so much for raising your hand to have this conversation, because as you pointed out privately to me, we talk about all these other people and what everyone else is doing, and we don't often talk about what we're doing, or I don't talk about what we're doing. And this was such a nice way to share that with our community. And also, as you said, I think a lot of people will relate to your experience, to the work that you're doing and the position that you're in. And it's always nice to just hear behind the scenes, what's going on? What's going through your head? What are decisions that you've made along your very successful path in your role? So thank you for sharing it.
Thank you so much, Cindy. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about this. I love talking about how we've learned and grown along the way. I also wanted to thank you for the podcast. It's been, you know, it's a wonderful thing to listen to on my bike on the way in the morning. I pretend I'm working, you know, oh yeah, I'm working, even though I left the house later than I should have. But it's also gives so much food for thought. And yes, I wanted to be able to give the perspective of the recipient of those fundraising services, because sometimes it can feel completely overwhelming. Oh, wait, I have to do this. Wait, I'm going to introduce that. It's just a lot. I also wanted to give you the amazing news that I presented at the Vision Serve Alliance in an open space technology. I put out my hand to present on our peer-to-peer campaign, on the Because of Balance campaign. I had 15 or so sitting around me while I blabbered on about it. And there's been follow-up from one of those organizations. And our campaign is going to be copied this year in Colorado.
Amazing.
So much excitement. You know, I have no problem with that. It's a completely different country. And
totally.
It's just great. And so she emailed me like about a month ago to say she was putting her budget together. And but I just sent her everything. And so they're going to do the same in the state of Colorado.
That's cool. Exciting. Ripple effect.
Yeah.
Deborah, if our listeners want to connect with you, where should they go?
Our website is www.balancefba.org, as in Balance for Blind Adults, FBA.org. And my email is d.gold@balancefba.org. Balance for Blind Adults on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can find me on LinkedIn as my name, Deborah Gold. I am there. Please reach out anytime to ask me more about all of this.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast and for sharing all of this. And just I always enjoy spending time with you. So we could literally talk for hours about all things, including hair and biking and all the everything.
It's been an absolute pleasure to see you and talk to you again, Cindy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And to you, our listeners, for tuning in, thank you. As always, we'll see you next week.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.